Have you ever noticed how some people have names that actually tell you what their job is? I mean, as a child living in Port Talbot, we had a butcher called a fishmonger called Mr. Salmon, and the butcher was Mr. Lamb. Later on, when I started work, we had a quality controller called Mr. Goodenough. While doing some research for an update, I came across this comment. Quote, "We are living in an American idol society. God help us. We are going the way of the Roman Empire." And I read that and my computer went, beep, new message. The new message came from somebody saying, "Have you looked up at the Roman Empire lately? There were 5 main reasons why it fell, you know." So I thought, well, perhaps it might be a good idea to do a quick review as to why Rome fell. And are there any parallels with today? So I made a mistake of going to the bookshelf and picking up my abridged version of Gibbon's Rome, which runs to a mere 900 pages. So this could be rather a long split sermon. And I conveniently left it at home. But one thing Gibbon does mention right at the beginning, the actual whole thing is a whole series of books, by the way. It's a mammoth work. Gibbon states right at the very beginning, and this is quite interesting, he says, "Instead of inquiring why the Roman Empire was destroyed, we should rather be surprised that it subsisted for so long." Now, don't we feel a bit like that today when we look at this world? You know, you just look at the news. If you're looking at what we put up on that church website every day, there's 10 items normally. You read through them, and every day I look at it and think, how much longer can this thing hold together? Because it's falling apart at the seams. Anyway, Mr. Gibbon gave us 5 very convenient points, so we'll start with point number 1. I might explain what we're going to do is I'm going to handle the first 3, and then Mr. Bowles is going to handle the other 2. Because it's a very big subject, but it's very interesting. An article came out this last week. Oh, the first point is the undermining of the dignity and the sanctity of the family. And you know, as you'll see as we go through this, it is truly amazing. Every society that has fallen has gone the same road. It's just like a tape that keeps on playing, a loop. Are you married? Well, a lot of us are. We are now in a minority as wedding rates fall to a record low. Only 1 in 50 single women now marries every year, and only 1 in every 43 single men marries every year. The question I have is, where are the other 7? But never mind. That's the lowest marriage rates since they were first calculated in 1862. The first thing that is emphasized after the creation of Eve was marriage. Let's just turn to Genesis 22 and just remind ourselves. Genesis 2, verse 22, and it says, "And the rib which the eternal God had taken from man, made he a woman, and brought her unto the man. And Adam said, This is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman, because she was taken out of the man. Therefore, and this is the interesting bit, God made another being, and he made a woman completely different. But he said, therefore, because I've made them like this, therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh." That was God's original purpose. It wasn't a suggestion. It wasn't a recommendation. It was a commandment. Now, I was sent a very interesting little video the other day. I won't tell you where it came from, otherwise you'd be plaguing Mrs. Bowles for a copy of it. It was about men and women, and there was this comedian-type chappy who really hit the nail on the head, and he was looking at the man. He said, "Now, a man's mind is made up of little boxes." He said, "We have a box for the wife, a box for the kids, a box for money, a box for the car, a box for the computer, and none of the boxes touch. None of the boxes touch. That's the important thing." And then he goes over to the woman. He said, "Now, a woman's mind... it's like a big bundle of wire. And it's just everything. It's just like the internet. And he says, driven by emotion, you know. And he goes on, and you, having seen this thing 2-3 times, you still get into hysterics. Here's the thing, though. God made men and women different. The man tends to have broad overview. Yep, tends to be single-minded. You know, if I'm preparing a sermon, I really don't care what somebody's going on outside. Or it's... The woman can sort out the kids. She can be thinking what she's going to get for the shopping, planning dinner for that night, what she's going to wear on the Sabbath. She's got to phone somebody. And the amazing thing, she gets them all done. Because that's the kind of mind a woman has to have for her job as a homemaker. Because there's always 5,000 things going on at once. Now you take those two together and you make one flesh. You get one real entity. And you get balance. Now, the one thing Satan wants is he wants that destroyed. Satan comes along and he mixes it all up. Men become more feminine. I remember years ago listening to a radio program with Kenneth Williams, who is a man of another persuasion, shall we say, going on about, oh, don't do that or I'll hit you with my handbag. And everybody laughed. It sounded really funny. Because it was so different from the way things were done back in the early 60s. But that's when the rot set in. Satan was clever. He made homosexuality acceptable because he made it funny. Then we had the woman become more masculine. When a woman becomes more masculine, she starts to get the same mindset as a man. She loses a lot of the original mind that she had. She becomes more boxes. And some women make it to the top. But if you check them out, you ask any other woman, they don't want to work for them. They don't want to work for them because they're horrendous. They're out of type. They're not doing what they were designed for. And this is what Satan's done. Feminism, women's rights, birth control, abortions. It's your body. You do what you like with it. Homosexuality, lower birth rates lead to extinction. And one demographer said, do you think it can't happen? In 30 years worldwide, birth rates have fallen more than 50%. In 1979, the average woman on this planet has 6 children. You guys have got a way to go yet. Today, the average is 2.9 children and falling. Demographers tell us that with a birth rate of 1.3, a nation will lose half its population every 45 years. And aren't we going this way? This is one of Satan's chief goals, is to destroy the family. Mr. Armstrong said, God is a family. This is from Mystery of the Ages. God is the supreme divine family. He is the creator of all that is. He is the ultimate purpose. The creation of perfect, holy, righteous character in man made immortal to become part of the God family. It's all family, family, family. That's why Satan hates it. Because he knows that when that family is complete, even if he was left around, who would he be? There would be billions and billions of sons of God with that perfectly holy, righteous character, mirroring Jesus Christ. Where would Satan peg in all this? He wouldn't even get a job as an office boy. So he sees his future as being totally trash. That's why he wants to trash God's church. He wants to trash the whole of God's plan. Mr. Armstrong goes on, marriage for much of society is on the way out. In some areas, divorce virtually equals marriages. Remember, this is 1985 or thereabouts. Family life has broken down, though the family is a basic building block of a stable civilization. Well, Mr. Armstrong, we've got good news for you. The divorce rate is dropping. In fact, the divorce rate is plummeting. For the simple reason is that nobody's getting married. Over 50% of the people in this country living together are not married. They are, to quote my granddad, they're all living in sin. That's exactly what's happening. Now, how important is this family relationship? I'm going to give you a few scriptures. Just write them down. You can check them later. Because what I want to get across here is a thought pattern. Right? Write down Exodus 3:14. You know the story. Moses, the burning bush. He gets given his instructions and he turns around and he says, who shall I say sent me? And the one who became Jesus Christ said, you tell them, I am that I am. And he said, this is what you'll say to the children of Israel. I am has sent me unto you. Right? Now that I am literally means I exist. Or as Mr. Armstrong says, I'm the eternal. In John 8:58, Christ has this interaction, shall we say, with the Pharisees and so on. And they were going on about Abraham was their father and so forth. And at the end, Jesus said, verily, verily, I say to you, before Abraham was, I am. Same expression. That really didn't go down well because they wanted to kill him. Because as far as they were concerned, he was saying he was God. And they understood that. I remember years ago, there was much discussion in the church about was Jesus actually God? And I mean, there's one scripture there that proves it. It's dead simple. He said, I am. And the Jews went wild. And he had to sort of like disappear somehow miraculously. Otherwise, they'd have stoned him. But when Christ prayed to the Father in Mark 14, 36, he was praying to the Father, asking him, he knew what he was about to go through, the death he was going to go through. It wasn't very nice. And he was asking God if it be his will, if he could take this away. And he addresses God as Abba, Father, which is a very intimate term. And then if you come on down to Matthew 6, where Christ is telling us how to pray, he's telling us how do we address the ultimate power in the universe. The best thing he could come up with is our Father. And later on, Paul mentions in Romans 8:15, he says, for you have not received the spirit of bondage again to fear, but you have received the spirit of adoption or sonship, whereby we cry, Abba, Father. That's what this is all about. It's a family relationship at the God plane level. When we get down on our knees and pray, our Father, it's almost like saying, Dad. That Abba is such an intimate term. That's what Satan hates. That's why he's gone out in such a way to destroy the family and the family relationship. Have you noticed our government hates families? This government in this country is stunning. We had a case recently where, and I think Mr. Bosmer mentioned it, I know it was on the, we put it up on the news, where a couple, a granddad and a grandma were looking after some children because their daughter had had problems. And they were taken away forcibly and given to a couple of homosexuals. Now, Peter Hitchens, writing in the Daily Mail, and I don't know how he gets away with writing this, but he does. He says, we show tolerance to gays, and he's got it in inverted commas. He says, you know, but, you know, they give us tyranny in return. He says, if I never again had to read or write a word about homosexuals, I would be very happy. I really don't want to know what other people do in their bedrooms, but these days, they really, really want us to know. And more important, they insist we approve. Yes? We are forced to say that we think homosexuality is a good thing, that homosexual couples are equal in all ways to heterosexual married couples. Most emphatically, we are compelled to agree that homosexual couples are just as good at bringing up children as the children's own grandparents. In fact, better. The facts of the case are the daughter was a drug abuser. And as he said, like so many others in the country, which permits the endless promotion of drug use by rock stars and refuses to punish the possession of narcotics, the only measure that would work. All these pop stars are snorting cocaine and all the rest of it, and very little ever happens to them. They get away with it. The government lets them off. So everybody else does it. I heard yesterday on the news that whatever they call it, one dose of cocaine is cheaper than a pint of beer. Then, he says, when they seek to look after the children, they are first insultingly informed that they are too old and that their minor illnesses disqualify them from the task. This is the grandparents. They were in their 50s. They weren't that old. He says, heaven help any employer who dare to discriminate in this fashion. But the new thought police are oddly exempt from their own rules. He says, next, the grandparents were informed that the children are to be put into the care of a homosexual couple. And this is the crucial moment. They are warned in the most terrifying terms that if they object to this arrangement, they will never see their grandchildren again. If Adolf Hitler could read this, I'll tell you what, he'd be saying, whoa, I missed that one. And this is the British government in 2009. This is the action of tyranny in operation, especially the use of children to blackmail their parents and grandparents. People who can do this can do anything. Keep that in mind. You can murder somebody and get away with a couple of years in prison. You go and criticize somebody publicly who's gay, a pervert, and you can end up in jail for a far longer period. And it says this country doesn't like children either. The Sunday Times came up the other day. Couples of more than two children are being irresponsible by creating an unbearable burden on the environment, the government's green advisor advised. He's green. I think he's mould, and the mould's in his brain. Jonathan Porritt, who chairs the government's Sustainable Development Commission, says curbing population growth through contraception and abortion must be at the heart of the fight against, wait for it, global warming. You're almost at a loss for words. What sort of demented mind gets to think like this? Just write down Psalm 127. You all know it. Children are the heritage of the eternal, and the fruit of the womb is his reward. As arrows in the hand of a mighty man, so are children of the youth. Happy is the man that has his quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed. The government says, no. Two. And even then you're pushing it. But we'll let in hundreds of thousands of illegal immigrants that have come into this country and are wrecking our health service. You know, one person that comes into this country with AIDS costs our government £25,000 a year for pills to stay alive. £25,000 a year. And there are thousands of them that have come in from different countries. What would make society fall? This is a social scientist, right? He says there are certain virtues that keep society working, things like honesty and participation. And without family, those virtues would cease to exist. The future of humanity is linked to the factor of the family being recognized as a generator of social virtue. When the opposite happens, it means that our path has turned towards a new barbarism. This comes from the only group, as far as I can see today, the standing up for the family, and that's the Roman Catholic Church. There's a director, Pier Paolo Donetti, a member of the Pontifical Academy of Social Sciences. That's why the Pope is jumping up and down, because they want to clean up. He sees everything just falling apart, and he knows why. They know their history. They made most of it. Dr. Carl Zimmermann, in 1947, when I was only 3 years old, wrote a book called Family and Civilization. He studied several civilizations and empires, and he came up with eight reasons. It's all the same thing. The breakdown of marriage, the rise of divorce, the loss of the traditional meaning of the wedding ceremony, the rise of feminism, increasing public disrespect for parents and authority in general, acceleration of juvenile delinquency, promiscuity and rebellion, refusal of people with traditional marriages to accept their family responsibilities, and increasing interest in the spread of sexual perversions and sex-related crimes. I think when that book came out, if 1947, it would have been like hot. I mean, in those days, you wouldn't even say. When I was a child, in fact, when we went to college in 1964, homosexual was a word you talked about very quietly. It was a swear word. Every historian, he says, even modern homosexual revisionists admit that Rome was riddled with homosexuals. Hadrian, one of the best emperors, traveled the empire with a youthful lover, Antoninus. Caligula and Nero were accused of having sex with just about anyone and everything. You see how bad it got. But it's not like that today, really. I was just saying to Mr. Bowles, when we first got the internet, which must have been, I don't know how long, 10 years ago, did it? No, less than that. That's about 6 or 7 years ago. Just for a laugh one night, we typed in sex and hit the button. And up comes this thing and it says, one of 3 million and whatever it was. Just for a laugh last night, we did it again. One of 793 million websites. Does that tell you something? Rome, an epidemic of divorce. They divorce in order to remarry. Marriage has become merely a form of legalized adultery. Does that describe today? Undermine the dignity and sanctity of the family, and you destroy the nation. And that's what's happening. And it's happening right now. The second point is higher taxes and spending of public money for free bread and circuses for the people. As Rome went downhill and downhill and downhill, this is what they tended to do. Mr. Armstrong talks about today's governments demand 40, 50, even 90% in inheritance taxes, income taxes, hidden taxes, federal taxes, state taxes, school board taxes, city taxes. In this country now, a person who's out there slaving away at a job works until somewhere around about the middle of June to pay the government off. More than half what they earn in a year, in one form or another, goes to the government. And yet, in September, in fact, if you want to look on the internet, you can find the articles. I think it's September, October, November, December in 1969. There was a series of articles called The Modern Romans. They're really well worth a read. They bring out, in fact, the rise of taxation, the rise of debt, the rise of inflation, major causes for the collapse of the Roman Empire. Doesn't that just sound like today? A banking system is gone. It's there in shape and form only. Every week you'll notice there's articles going up there where it was 100 and odd billion, then it was 600 billion, then it was 900 billion, then it was a couple of trillion. You know, they don't know what they're talking about anymore. They have totally, totally lost it because our currency, as you all know, has absolutely no value. Loopholes in the tax law benefit the wealthy. If you can earn £1 million a year, you'll probably end up paying single figures in tax. But you earn 20, 30,000 a year and you get the full whack because you're not rich enough to pay a clever lawyer a way to find out all the way around, all the loopholes and so on that they've got. Tax avoidance and tax evasion have become a way of life. This is in Rome, by the way, not here now. And we don't do that today, do we? Joke. The welfare state brought Rome to its knees to keep the people under control, which is what government today is all about. It's keeping people under control. It's not about looking after the people. It's not about protecting the people. It's called control. They would rather finance all these circuses. Protectionism. A lot of it, I almost get a bit bored putting it up because every time I go in there to search for news items, it's protectionism, protectionism. And this is vital that we watch because that's what's going to cause the total financial collapse of the world, what Mr. Armstrong talked about, trade wars. And trade wars will lead to a total shattering of the financial system, out of which will rise the European power. And I think we might just be a little bit closer to that than we think. It says to encourage industry in her various satellite nations. Remember, Rome went out and conquered and conquered and conquered and spread, right? She would go in, they'd beat the place up, they'd take a few of the local leaders, they'd take a bit of their local religion, stick it all in a hodgepodge, give them Roman law, and that was it. But they then put industry out there to try and get this, because it says here, Rome attempted a policy of unrestricted trade. Does that sound familiar today? The global society, the global village. But the Roman workman was unable to compete with this cheap foreign labour and demanded high tariffs to protect himself. No surprise there, then we've got the same thing today. As Mr. Sarkozy's just found out when he tried to protect the French car industry. The Germans are all upset, but meanwhile the Germans have already set things in place weeks ago to protect their industry. But they didn't say anything about it. It's all just coming out. Bankers can't kick the sporting habit. Now, this kind of links into the next point. The banking system has collapsed. Take the Royal Bank of Scotland. We, the taxpayer, had to bail them out for 20-odd billion pounds just to keep them running, right? What do? Thank you very much. They pay themselves over £1 billion in bonuses for making the mess in the first place. And what does the government do? Oh, we'll have to discuss this. We'll have a couple of people in and make them say sorry. Why don't they get the money back from them that they've been skimming off for all their dirty deals from the last several years? Royal Bank of Scotland's just gone out and they've renewed the contract to sponsor the Six Nations rugby for the next several years at £400 million of taxpayers' money. And the government do nothing. Why? Because we've gone sports mad, which is part of the next point that we'll get to. They bring out something interesting, though. There's a group here done a study, and they said there is indeed a strange correlation between failed companies and sporting sponsorships. All the big companies that have been out there sponsoring this and sponsoring that and all the rest of it, they've all gone belly up. Manchester United sponsor American International Group. Newcastle United supporter Northern Rock. And failed British bank Bradford & Bingley, which sponsored not one but two soccer clubs, have crashed spectacularly since the credit crisis has started. It says they also point the finger at executives who benefit from the luxury boxes, hospitality packages and privileged access to sporting celebrities, all at the expense of the shareholder. Well, come on, you're the boss of the bank and you're a football fanatic. So you make sure that your favourite team gets the sponsorship, don't you? You sign the cheques. You carry the sway in the boardroom. You have the special box. You're in all the matches. You get to talk to all the players. And that leads us to the third point. The mad craze for pleasure and sport. You know, back in Rome, they had the games. They had gladiators who fought to the death. Well, not quite. They did. But the guy that died, it had been decided he was going to peg it in the first place because the top gladiators always made it to the next week. It's like the television series. Give it all these television series. The good guy has a terrible time, but in the end, he comes out on top. And that's what these gladiators used to do. They were worth a fortune. Some of them were very, very rich. Some of them got so rich they bought their own freedom. They were idolized by the public. I wonder if they had one called Ronaldo. BBC 10 o'clock news. James Reynolds reports on the closing ceremony of the Olympics. He opens by saying, "In a state which has no God, the Olympics have been a religion." He closes with the words, "Now these people will have to find something else to believe in." But think about it. They had chariot races and they used to have big sickle things coming out of the wheels. And the idea was that galloping around this thing at crazy speed, you had to try and get your sickle in the spokes of the other guy's wheel and rip his wheel off, which tossed him into the air and he got trampled to death normally. Pretty nasty. And then, of course, you had the old gladiators. And then, you know, we fed a few Christians to the lions and so on. But, of course, we don't do that today. I went through some of the alternative sports on the TV, like cage boxing I'd never seen before. And that seems quite nice. You know, when the place is, like, covered in blood, they drag one of them away and that's it. It's just like a gladiatorial combat. Now, wrestling looks like it's a bit of a farce. It's pretty much stage managed. There's millions of people follow this. Millions of people follow it. Look at the football. Ronaldo recently piled his £200,000 Ferrari into a concrete wall. Totally wrote it off. And the only comment in the newspaper was, "Well, 2 weeks' wages will buy him another one." He earns £100,000 a week. To show you how things have gone down the tubes, though, last year that would have been $220,000. Now it's about $130,000. That shows you where our currency has gone in 12 months. We recently had a footballer on the market at £100 million, the asking price. £100 million for a guy who could slip off a curbstone and break his leg and be out of it for 12 months. Is there any sense in this? Professional sport has literally become a mega business. I don't think the average person has got any idea. Why do they pay Ronaldo £100,000 a week to kick a ball around a field? Right? Well, first of all, he does it a lot better than most people do. Right? If he gets a goal in one of these big cup competitions that wins the match, that can be for Manchester United a cheque of £25 million. That's just to get into the quarterfinals of the European Cup. and all these big international competitions. It's television rights. It's mega business. Manchester United's annual turnover is in hundreds of millions of pounds. A profit, rather. Now, not all of them make a profit, because just as you can make big profits, you can also make big losses, as Chelsea have just found out, I believe. Then there's gambling on the sport. That was a big thing back in Roman times. Gambling today, the government taxes gambling, right? And that tax amounts to hundreds of millions of pounds every year. It's difficult to get an accurate figure because they try and cover it up. The last figure I could get was 3 or 4 years ago, and it was about 400 odd million pounds. That's just straight to the exchequer. And the actual gambling taxes are only a few percentage points. So the actual turnover in gambling, it must be in hundreds of billions a year. Entertainment, recreation, athletics, they're all not wrong. Far from it. They're very important. Part of a well-balanced lifestyle. But, and this is what Mr. Armstrong said, when the pursuit of pleasure becomes a national goal, the nation is in serious trouble. And that's where we are now. And the trouble with England is, we invented all the games and then we can't play them. I saw on the news that they'd been thoroughly thrashed in the West Indies at cricket. There's something like 51 runs all out. And it was a question of, well, never mind, old chap, we came second, you know. You see, the problem with Rome, life became too complex. That's what happened to them. You know, Rome, we have this impression that these people back there were a little bit, you know, I mean, it was 2,000 years ago. They had traffic jams. Okay, there were chariots and horses and they weren't cars. They had traffic jams. They had urban problems. They had urban crime. They had problems with the sewers, which contrary to general, you know, people think they had a marvellous system, but it also didn't work sometimes. They had health problems. As soon as you start cramming people into cities, you have problems. That's why cities are not going to be a big deal in the millennium. A modern take on it, you see, we're so clever. It took Rome hundreds of years, eventually, to collapse. Remember when Paul wrote Romans 1 and 2 Timothy there, where he talks about in the last day perilous times shall come? He was talking about then. At that stage, he thought Christ was coming in his lifetime. That was the mess Rome was in then, and it got worse. Right? Now, we're much better at it because we've got the internet. And we've got this wonderful thing called television. Now, it can be fantastic. If you're into sport and you like, say, the Olympic Games, you can sit in the comfort of your lounge and in full living colour, you can watch something live happening the other side of the world as it's actually happening. If there's a drama with the news, like, for instance, that plane that crashed on the Hudson River. Whoa! You know, the photographs within seconds, they're up there with somebody with a camera or a mobile phone or something. Within seconds. And within a few hours, we had actual video of the guy landing the actual plane and people scrambling onto the wings. You know, back in just over a couple hundred years ago, when a battle was won, like Trafalgar, it took days and days and days for the news to get back to England. In fact, if the battle was halfway around the world, it could take months. Now, ping, it's there. But the problem with all this is it's too much for people's minds to take in. I know I used this example a few years back, and it's a bit stupid in one sense. But if a big jumbo jet crashed at the end of your street, and there was 400 people wiped out, you'd be horrified. Everybody would be horrified. 2 weeks later, another one crashes a mile further into the forest. And people would go, wow, that's unusual. And then another one crashes 2 weeks later in the same place. If I know the English, the next week they'd all be together saying, let's lay bets now. You give me 4-1, there'll be another one happening this Friday. You see, we've got so cold and callous. We've become so demented as a nation that we will take two young children who did not want to leave their grandparents, screaming, literally, and give them to a pair of perverts. And don't tell me that's the system, because we've got one that my wife deals with who's got similar problems. His mother's got problems. She couldn't look after the child. The local council have found them a bungalow. They've converted the whole place for them. The school can't provide any more ongoing training, so suddenly another school is provided. Same law, same nation. So why is that happening up in Edinburgh? It's the mind. The mindset is going. It's going. And it's going because we've allowed ourselves to be taken down a road that we shouldn't have been. In the last 20 years, more and more and more people are having problems with food. Food allergies. When I was a kid, we ate anything and everything. I mean, you know, you stomped on our foot and our mouth opened. Now, well, milk is a problem. Bread is a problem. Going back because we've messed all the seeds up and, you know, we're using artificial fertilizers and we're forcing this and forcing that and forcing the next thing. We've wrecked the system. We are wrecking our bodies. What about our minds? What about our minds? You see, this is the problem. Because your body is the result of what you've eaten. And your mind. That's why the Holy Spirit is so vital to us. That's what gives us that sound mind. We can back off. This is not our world. As I said in the update, we're not part of the problem. We are part of the solution. Now that sounds a bit crazy, doesn't it? I mean, just look at us. If this whole group was suddenly wiped out right now, there'd hardly be a ripple in this country. And yet, I go so far as to say that the people in this room could sort the problem out. It's stunning. And the reason we have that knowledge is we have a sound mind. This lot don't. They've lost it. They've lost it completely. Our nation has become calloused and shockproof. They lose touch with the real world. This is what it was like when Paul wrote in Romans and he wrote to Timothy, and it's the same today. Let's just turn in closing to 2 Timothy. Because they thought it was pretty bad then. They thought it was pretty bad then. 2 Timothy 3. 2 Timothy 3 verse 1. But know this. What Paul's saying here is, get the point. That in the last days, perilous times will come. And if you look in the margin, my Bible's got times of stress. Isn't that what we live in? There are people out there today who've lost half their pension fund in the last 3 months. There are people out there who've lost their house. They've lost most of their savings and they've lost their job. Isn't that wonderful? And yet these bankers who caused all the problem are still paying themselves bonuses. The one guy says, I shan't pay myself a bonus this year. I only earn £1.74 million. I'll settle for that. I'd settle for the income tax on it. I'd settle for a tithe of the income tax on it. But you see, it's this demented mind. And what is the world? What are we dealing with in the world? Well, this is what we are dealing with. Men have become lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boasters, proud, blasphemers. See the buses going around London there? The question mark about God. You see? And we have all this thing now, because it's the anniversary with the Mr. Origin of the Species, Mr. Darwin himself. I think when he is resurrected and he sees what he's caused, he is going to go into hiding for a long time. And yet there are other articles that came out. I sent one to Mr. Bowles recently, where they go into this genome business. And I mean, the guy just says, no way. We cannot bridge the gap between non-life and life. We can't do it. And they can't do it because it's spirit. And they don't understand anything about that. Blasphemous, disobedient to parents. I saw in the news, Mr. Monroe sent me a copy as well. A 13-year-old boy is now the proud father of a nice little girl. Isn't that sweet? He says, I'm going to be a good dad. He says, I just hope I get my pocket money now, Ruby. I'm going to need it. Those of us who've had children know the responsibility that a child brings, right? All the ups and downs and everything. And it is fantastic. But for a 13-year-old, he should be out kicking a football around the field and dreaming about getting paid £100,000 a year for it. Unthankful. That describes today, doesn't it, pretty much? Unholy. Unloving. I watched a short section of wrestling. And these two guys, and they were huge men. I mean, they must have probably been about 500 or 600 pounds of meat between the two of them. They were 6 foot odd. They were this built like a brick house. And they were slinging each other around, smacking each other against the ropes. And the camera panned down onto the front row. And here's mainly women. And you should have seen the faces. Yeah, get him, tear him apart. Unloving, unforgiving, slanderers, without self-control. Does that ring any bells? You know, the sporting world, watch things carefully in the sporting world. So many of these games now are actually rigged. If you think over the last few years, there was allegations brought against snooker players for throwing games because the betting cartels stand to make tens of millions of pounds if they can guarantee a certain game is lost. How easy is it for it to lose a snooker game? It's dead easy. A few years back, we had the goalkeeper, Krobbelaar, Liverpool goalkeeper, who was accused of throwing games, letting goals in or whatever. And so it goes on and on and on. Traitors. This country just took the laws on treason and flattened them, squashed them. Why? Because that's what we've done by giving our power to Europe. We have done something that's totally against the law of the land. Just as back in the late 60s, making homosexuality legal, making abortion legal, is the law of the land. But it's diametrically opposite to the law of God, because it comes back to this demented mind. The same demented mind that crushed Rome, the same demented mind that crushed Greece, check their history. Go back to the Babylonians, go back to the Persians. What were the Babylonians doing when they got clobbered? Having a great big booze up. And Daniel was there to witness it. And the Persians took over. In one night, the greatest city on the face of the earth, overrun. In one night. And here we are today. And people say, oh, well, it can't really go down, can it? Oh, yes, it can. And I'll tell you something. The speed at which it's going to go down is going to take people's breath away. Watch what's happening, particularly in the United States. But don't forget us here, because we're also going down at a tremendous speed. It says, traitors, headstrong, haughty. All these film stars. You know, they make you sick. I think the women seem to vie to see who can walk in public with the least amount of clothes on. Lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. Does that ring true? Absolutely. It says, having a form of godliness but denying its power. God is nice to most people who are, quote, religious, but they don't do it. They don't believe that Christ is coming back. Most people don't. Well, there are some that do. But the vast majority, if you look at the Church of England, no ways. They have that form of godliness. But it's all Satan's system. And it says, from such people turn away. Because if you follow it, if you get involved in it, he said, for of this sort are those who creep into households through the television set I was horrified to look at, was it EastEnders, is it? I saw a write-up on it and I read it. And they were going through all the things they had on EastEnders. They had homosexuality, they had abortion, they had marriages breaking up and violence, husbands beating up wives. And this is what people sit there every day watching. Yes, they'll pour it in. Does the mind in. It says, for this sort are those who creep into households and make captives of gullible women, loaded down with sins, led away with various lusts. Again, it destroys the sound mind that people should have. Rome went this way, and all the other great civilizations went down the same road. And unfortunately, hopefully we're the last that's going to do it, because after this will come the answer to the problem. And that's to say, that's what we are. We are the solution to the problem.